Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Erica Harold is here in studio with me today. She's a friend of the show. Erica, always great to see you.
Thank you so much for having me back.
I'm sorry I have to continue to play that.
I mean, love that. I'm not going to complain. I promise you.
That was like 22 years ago or something.
I know.
Like
let's keep that quiet.
Don't do the math.
Let's not encourage math.
No math is going on here. Put your calculators away. So we're here talking about bullying, and which is your topic when you were reigning as Miss America, and it continues to be your topic. And I'm really interested in getting right into it. Half of America's workforce has been bullied at one time or another. I was shocked to see that statistic. That's over 48 million people. It takes a toll on people, physical, mental, and emotional. It leads to lack of productivity and employee turnover. I want to talk about how to identify what bullying is, what you can do about it, and how is it going to stop. Erica, you know, you are going to tell your story, and you've told this story to me before, and it's something that I think it makes you the spokesperson that it makes sense. You come from downstate Urbana, home to University of Illinois, and you were bullied when you were young. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about how severe that bullying was and how it affected you long term?
It had a profound impact on my life, and I was bullied when I was a freshman in high school. It started out just with name-calling, teasing, and taunting, a lot of names that maybe many of your listeners would be familiar with. And then it escalated to vandalism of my family's home. We had to call the police. It was very frightening for my younger siblings. And one of the things that stands out is that the behavior was allowed to go unchecked. So I would go to school, and the students were allowed to sing songs with these very vulgar, derogatory names in the hallways, in the classroom. And this persisted and escalated all the way to death threats. And after about a year and a half, I had to transfer to a different high school. It was a very difficult experience because if you think back to your own adolescent period, that's the time when you're trying to figure out who you are, shape your identity. And during that period in time, I was sort of wanting to shrink back to become invisible.
Wow. And, you know, and there weren't the avenues that there are now. I mean, I'm not saying it's perfect now because I still hear from parents who have kids in school who are being bullied, who are schools are not taking it as seriously as they should. And regularly, the person who's bullied has to leave the school and go somewhere else, and the bullier gets to stay, which is very unfortunate. But just, you know, you went on. You became a graduate of Harvard Law School. You became Miss America in 2003. You've run for Congress and Illinois Attorney General, and now you're Executive Director of the Illinois Supreme Court's Commission on Professionalism, which has to do with civility in our profession. You just put together this amazing survey that turned into a seminar that I watched, and I want to talk a little bit about your findings. And again, we're going to talk about this in the workplace context. This is the general workplace. It can apply to lawyers. It can apply to corporate America. What is the definition of bullying?
In our survey, we use a specific definition: inappropriate behavior designed to intimidate, control, or humiliate another person's actions or another person. And we wanted to really focus on inappropriate behavior, and we focused on improper control because we were also looking at the ways in which people might be bullied to do things that are unethical. But for our survey, we had a very specific definition, and then we identified specific bullying behaviors so people could say whether they had been bullied based on that definition, and then identify whether they had actually been subjected to certain behaviors.
Even the word bully, you know, to me has a connotation going back to my childhood where it was just kids on a playground. But we're not talking about kids on a playground. We're talking about adults in a work environment where you are trying to make a living for yourself and your family, and you're being prevented from doing that because of someone's really bad, obnoxious behavior. And I think, you know, it almost you almost want to elevate it above that word in a way, if that makes sense.
We thought about that word a lot, and I can tell you, I wanted to use that word bullying because it really does conjure up exactly what you said. And what it also does is it underscores the dichotomy of, in schools, that kind of behavior is now deemed unacceptable. Like you said, it's not perfect, but there are policies in place, and we recognize that it's unacceptable for children to treat other children a certain way. But in the workplace, bullying is actually not illegal. And so a lot of remedies that might exist for people in other capacities and other aspects of their life do not actually exist if they are being bullied in the workplace. And I wanted people to think about the question with, why are our standards higher for children in the schoolyard than we have in our boardrooms? We should actually be holding adults to higher standards. And so when we think about what we think is appropriate in a schoolyard, we need to be thinking about, why are we standing for less within our own boardrooms?
Before we take a break, I want to just make sure our listeners understand what is actionable and what is not. And I think to do that, Erica, we want to talk about, as you gave the definition of bullying, but what is the definition of harassment, and how is that actionable and bullying is not?
Such a great question, because most people think, well, don't we already have laws and policies that cover this? But harassment is only actionable if it's focused on protected characteristics. So if you're being targeted at your workplace, but you can't prove that it's on the basis of a protected characteristic like race, sex, religion, military status, any of the different kind of categories that a state might view as a protected characteristic, you actually do not have any recourse currently under federal law and state law. And that probably surprises a lot of people, but that's one of the reasons why we wanted to focus on this issue, because there's a large gap in law and policy that impacts people regardless of the profession in which they work.
And again, one last question before we go to break. This is not just about hurt feelings. This is not just about people not feeling good about their job. This is about serious problems and about employee turnover and lack of productivity. Can you address that issue a little bit? And I know you tried to quantify that in your survey and in the seminar that you presented.
You're actually absolutely right. This isn't just about people's subjective feelings. This is about the quantifiable impact on people's careers and a corporation or legal organization's actual productivity. So what we saw was that when attorneys in our survey, but this crosses across all professions, when people are getting bullied, they are having decreased productivity. They are more likely to leave their job. They actually start to suffer physical and mental health implications because of this, such as anxiety, such as different other physical ailments and manifestations of stress. And so this has a really serious impact. The one statistic that stood out most as it relates to that from our survey was that we surveyed all of Illinois active lawyers, and we found that nearly one in five had actually left a job practicing law due to bullying. If people think about kind of our precarious job market and how risk-averse a lot of lawyers are, myself included, leaving a job to find another job because of how you are being prevented from serving your clients, doing the thing you were hired to do, it really underscores the dramatic impact on people's lives, careers, and then on the people they're supposed to be serving.
Absolutely. And yet there is no recourse. I mean, how many times have people from the listeners from WGN called me and said, Karen, this boss is doing this, that, and the other thing? I said, well, is it because you're a woman? Is it because you're African American? Is it because, and if it isn't, and they're saying, no, he's just a jerk to everyone, being an equal opportunity jerk is not actionable. And a lot of times I will tell people, if you can't resolve it through your HR, through doing what you need to do, negotiating, you know, documenting and all of those things which we're going to talk about, you might just leave, you know. And I hate to tell people to leave their job, you know, especially if they otherwise like their job, but
right.
But there's no way to change the scenario unless that person is going to be called to task. for what he or she is actually doing.
Absolutely. And it leaves people in a position where they're being forced to choose between their mental and physical health and the things that they love to do. And nobody should be forced to leave a job that they're good at, because as we'll get into some of the research, that oftentimes people who are bullied are actually very good at their jobs. They're high performers. And what a talent drain when people are being bullied out of doing the thing at which they're excelling.
Okay, so we're talking about anti-bullying. You're talking about this massive survey that you did, and we defined bullying versus harassment. You know, one of the things in your seminar that I really found interesting were the traits of people who were bullied. So I'm thinking to myself, maybe you're a meek and mild person. Maybe you're a person who's not performing very well, insecure in your job. That's not the case.
No. Dr. Dorothy Susskind, who is our wonderful expert and a nationally renowned expert on workplace bullying, said some of the traits of people who are bullied in the workplace: high performers, exceptionally talented people. So people who stand out in some way, but stand out as highly ethical, as innovative, maybe want to change the status quo, and sometimes then create a sense of other people being threatened because they perform at such a high level.
Interesting. So it may be kind of a little bit of an envy thing and a little bit of intimidation by someone who's out there just doing a really good job.
Absolutely. And then the way bullying sort of works is it can be a gaslighting effect for that person, where people start to micromanage them. People start to undermine them in highly critical ways. And so someone who has been a rock star performer starts to engage in self-doubt, wondering, why am I being excluded from things? Why are people sort of denigrating the ideas that I'm setting forth, not realizing that the talent that they're exhibiting may be the reason why some of the people in their workplace are bullying them.
So when bullying happens, is there some idea that it's more common for a man or a woman to be a bully or to be bullied? Did you look into any of that?
We did not look into that, but I can tell you anecdotally, people tell me about bullies from that are men and women. And so I don't think it's the case that only men or only women bully. I hear stories from people from both.
And I'm going to address this, and we talked about this off air, that there's an idea that younger people are more sensitive, and maybe they are, and they're more aware of political correctness, let's say, and their integrity and their right to be, you know, to not be bullied. They grew up with that. They probably actually had high school classes or courses, or at least talks from their teachers and administration about bullying and how, why not to bully, and what happens if you are bullied. So they're aware. Are we talking about oversensitivity, or are we talking about, like you said, the definition is pretty objective?
We're talking about objectively bad behavior, where I think young people in our study, they were the ones most likely to be bullied, but that tended to have implications of power dynamics. So the ones that had the least amount of allies within a workplace, the ones who had the least amount of experience, the ones who probably were less likely to report because they were very reliant upon the recommendations of their supervisor, and the ones who felt like, I don't want to report this behavior because maybe I will lose my job and I don't have a savings. So some of the behavior that people reported in our survey, just in case your listeners are wondering, what are we talking about? We're talking about everything from shouting, name calling, insults, physical contact, so getting in your space, hovering, staring at you, cyberbullying. We even had some lawyers report things that would be categorized as assault. Then we were also looking at some of the ways in which people can sabotage you without you even knowing it. So keeping you off of emails, excluding you from meetings where you would ordinarily be a participant, spreading rumors about you in the workplace, about your work product. And you may not even know that these things have happened until you're passed over for a promotion. And all of a sudden you realize your career has plateaued or started to decline. And it's only after the fact that you realize that there have been people working to proactively denigrate your career, and you had no way of standing up for yourself.
It's just amazing that people in the workplace have the energy
Absolutely.
To do that. But I would imagine, like with most people who are harassers or bulliers or whatever, it sort of it's come second nature to them for some reason. It's just the way they operate. The way they survive in the workplace, or they think they have to survive, is to hurt other people to bring themselves up to the top, which is, you know, not true, but that's how they think, I would imagine.
And if they're never stopped, then they've never been given a consequence for their behavior. And so that's why calling out this behavior and giving it a specific name and saying it's wrong is sort of the first step in being able to address this behavior. Because as long as people can say, well, I'm just aggressive, I'm just tough, I just treat everyone poorly, everybody knows I'm just that person, then that kind of behavior tends to escalate. And so if we want to stop the most egregious behavior, we have to nip in the bud the behavior that crosses the line as soon as it does.
Let's talk about some concrete things that people can do at the workplace. So you're at the workplace, say you've been there for about a year, you've got a boss who is getting in your space and is using foul language and is, you know, the stuff is going on. You're watching it go on. What are the concrete things that a person can and should do?
So I will give a spectrum. Not all of them will be likely. So the first thing is, if your workplace does have a policy, you should follow the reporting mechanisms, because if you don't, you'll find yourself not able to exercise other types of recourse. But you want to immediately begin by documenting and document date, time, specifically what happened, and if there were any other witnesses. And this could be if you want to report it later, but it also helps you as you're trying to keep track in your own mind of what's happening in patterns. You also want to see if you can find allies within the workplace. And we focus a lot on bystanders, because bystanders are the ones who truly have the power to start to shift the culture in a workplace. So people who are witnessing the behavior, they're sort of on the fringes. Maybe they're not saying anything, but they're not joining in the bullying either. You want to try to enlist them as allies to see if they can sort of back up your work product, or in a meeting, if you're being cut off or your suggestion is just being minimized, see if that person's willing to say, hey, I want to hear what she has to say. She usually has good ideas. Because it's so important that we don't place all of the blame or all of the burden of shifting this responsibility on the person who's being targeted. Because usually you're being targeted because you don't have as much power.
And the reason that people don't step up to, you know, I would imagine there is a culture in a place like that, like a trickle-down culture. I've seen this, where you have bosses at the top who are doing this stuff, and then other people think they can do it too, because that's the culture in the company. And to come to someone's rescue or to come to someone's aid or to call someone out would be against that corporate culture. And that's hard to do, but it should be done.
Right. And the people who have more power, they have a greater obligation to exercise it for the greater good. And so even if you are not the one that's being targeted, there are some very simple ways that you can sort of intervene on someone's behalf. And it doesn't mean that you have to call them out. You can try to deflect in a situation. You can be the one who reports. You can be the one who goes to HR and says, I was uncomfortable because this thing happened. There are a lot of ways in which people have some agency. But first and foremost, it takes them to make a decision to exercise moral courage and to take a little bit of a risk.
Can you stay with us for another 15 minutes? We've got some nice calls and texts.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, because I want to get around to talking about Venetia Night, which
yes,
is a little off the topic, but you're going to be one of the judges in our boat parade of lit boats, and I want to talk about that. But I do want to really address this topic of conversation. I have some texters who said bullying against healthcare workers, specifically nurses, is disgusting, blaming nurses for all things that are broken in the system, specifically over scheduling, et cetera. I see that from my texts. It's across the board and all different. And I'm sure each area of whether it's medical or law or corporate or whatever, education, I'll bet that they each have their own little tweak, their own little element of difference, but they're all the same type of thing.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting that you bring up healthcare, because when I was doing research in preparation for this initiative, I started to look at some of the industries where you see a lot of bullying occurring, and the healthcare industry is one, because you have people who are really reliant upon other people to work collaboratively and cooperatively with them to deliver patient care. And it's not always the people with the most power who are actually the bullies. It's people who have the ability to sort of impede the efforts of other people, who have the ability to withhold resources or information that other people need, that can make everyone around them, their lives a bit more miserable. And so while power plays into this a great deal, it's sometimes people who are bosses and supervisors can actually find themselves being bullied by the people that they supervise.
Very, very interesting. If you have a comment here for me or for Erica Harold, 312-981-7200. We're going to take a break and we'll be coming back. But I do have a pressing question, because today is National Ice Cream Day. Erica Harold, what is your favorite ice cream flavor?
Before I realized I had dairy allergies, it was cookies and cream. Now that I realize I do have dairy allergies, it's raspberry sorbet.
There you go. I have those too. And I think, you know, if I have 5 minutes left to live, I'm going right for the pralines and cream. Personally,
I'm with you with the cookies and cream.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. She has just done a massive survey and a seminar about bullying in the workplace. She's the executive director of the Illinois Supreme Court's Commission on Professionalism, and she's former Miss USA. We had a couple of interesting texts, Erica. How do you deal with a narcissist in the workplace? And I think what I'd like to do is to roll that question into what kind of people. We talked about the bullying victims and what their type is, which is kind of surprising. But what are the types of bulliers? What are the characteristics of a person who does this kind of thing?
Some of the characteristics include delusions of grandeur. So the person who texted in about narcissism, I think they were on to something in terms of those delusions of grandeur. People who are very focused on their position in the workplace, people who tend to be underperformers, people who tend to be less innovative in their thinking. And it really tracks if you think about the characteristics of someone who is being bullied, is that somebody who is watching someone else excel, watching someone else perform well in the workplace and getting positive attention, another personality thinks to themselves, instead of trying to work harder, let me see what I can do to bring down that other person.
Well, absolutely. And it does kind of dovetail to the narcissist's lack of empathy, the idea of the narcissist being, you know, insecure at the root of everything. And so I wonder if there is some correlation there. But thank you, Texter 630. Also, 847 says, as a former elected official, I can tell you bullying against colleagues happens when voting on public issues. If you don't vote for my issue, I won't vote for your issue. Some people call that horse trading. Some people probably can call that bullying. But again, do we know that is there any workplace that is immune from bullying?
I haven't come across any workplace that's immune for bullying. And that's why it's so important for us to look at this from a really holistic, comprehensive perspective. While our study was focused on the legal profession, this transcends all professions and it impacts people's productivity.
Hey, Karen, I love this topic and your guest. I'm 75 years old. I was bullied in high school for 3 straight years. I had to leave. That sounds familiar. My hometown.
Yes.
Grew up in a small town. I still remember to this day. She asked, how long does it take to get past the pain? Thank you so much. I was going to ask you this, Erica. You have turned around a very horrible bullying experience that you spoke about into making it kind of your life's mission. And tell us about the pain that this bullying caused and how it impacted you. And then on the other hand, how it kind of propelled you into a good place.
I really appreciate that question, especially the person who wrote about their own experiences as well, because it does stay with people. It impacts you, especially when it's formative. For me, I had a wonderful family support system that helped to really boost my self-esteem. I did a lot of journaling, and that journaling was really helpful to me because it helped me to be able to make sense of my experience and to not be defined by it. That experience also was a catalyst for me deciding to become an attorney, because I wanted to advocate not only for myself, but for other people. And the night before the Commission on Professionalism published this report, I went back to the diary that I kept when I was being bullied. And I looked back and saw that one of the promises I wrote in my diary that when I had left the high school and gone to another high school was that if I was ever in a position of any influence to make a difference on the issue of bullying, I would try to do so. And so when we published that next day, it was October 1st, National Bullying Prevention Month, it felt so gratifying to feel that I'd kept faith with my younger self and that I was using this platform that I'm so blessed to have to be able to try to make an impact. And so people can overcome it. And Dr. Dorothy Susskind really encourages people to write and journal their experiences because you're able to gain strength and recognize that we do not have to be defined by the worst things that people call us. We can actually find courage and strength to help others.
That's just wonderful. And for people out there who have problems at the workplace and being bullied, you have children in schools who are being bullied, is there some source of information or someplace people can go to get information and to get help and to maybe understand this whole situation a little bit better?
Our website, tocivility.org, so the number two, the word civility.org, because we are trying to get a more civil society here, has some resources. We also have links to Dr. Dorothy Susskind's work because she has a wonderful book called Workplace Bullying, Finding Our Way Back to Big Tent Belonging. And she has very practical resources, gives very practical insights into why bullying occurs, something why we have difficulty challenging this behavior when we see it. And so she's somebody whose work I'd highly recommend.
She was really, really good in your seminar, very plain speaking, but yet so informative and really kind of changed my view on who the people who are doing this is and the extent of the damage and harm it does not only to the person, but to the whole organization. So I want to finish up our conversation, Erica, because I did rope you into this, and I hope it's going to be a good experience.
I know it will be. I already know it's going to be.
So Venetia Night is coming up. It's Saturday, July 26th, so a week from yesterday. It's going to be down on the Riverwalk. It used to be out, you know, in the lake, and there were fireworks and stuff. It's a little different now. We're going to do it on the Riverwalk. There are going to be a parade of boats that are going to be beautifully decorated, as they usually are, with lights and all kinds of themes. And we have celebrity judges. You are one of them. We have Mark Giangreco, Darlene Hill from Fox, Janet Davies, who is an entertainment reporter for ABC, and the current reigning Miss Chicago, Rhiannon Graham. And Alderman Brendan Riley is also going to be there. So you're all going to have a gavel. You're all going to be voting on the different boats that come by. I highly recommend that everybody go to Venetia Night. It's a family event. There are drinks and there are good food specials down there on the Riverwalk with all the great restaurants, strolling musicians, and all kinds of fun and surprises. And what do you think? Are you all geared up? Do you have your gavel ready? And are you taking bribes like most of the judges?
I, as the head of the Commission on Professionalism, I'm bringing a highly ethical approach to this. I will not accept bribes. My criteria, the one thing I'm most looking for, is something that's inspirational and aspirational. So I think we're going to see great illuminated boats, but I'm looking for something that gives me a feeling of inspiration, because what I love about this event is it's celebrating Italian American heritage and culture, but it's bringing all of Chicago together to celebrate everyone's heritage and culture. And so I'm looking for something that is unifying and inspires all of us to be our best.
And that's exactly what the Italian American Human Rights Foundation does. It's about Italians, but it's really about bringing, as you said, all ethnicities, all people from all walks of life together. And that is the antithesis of bullying, right?
So 100%.
So we're looking forward to you being a long-term celebrity judge at Venetia Night. Erica Harrell, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure to see you. And we'll see you again next time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.